This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We're the old ten, we're the old ten. We meet on a Saturday. We're the old ten, we're the old ten. We go to see the Villa play.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host and editor of MyOldManSaid.com. Joining me for this special 40 points celebration episode of the My Old Man Said podcast, Mr. Chris Budd. I hope you've brought your kazoo.
We're safe.
It's official.
Hello.
It's official. We can be cheery now. It's the only objective we had, isn't it, for the
Let's
whole season?
Let's set the bar low.
Well, that's the only objective we had. We had to survive, and that's it. We can
on the beach, my lord. On the beach.
Sack the season off now. We can get on with. Have we got any other hobbies? I don't know. I'll have to find one quickly.
Cricket.
So, as well as Villa's season coming to a premature end, I don't know if Phil's recovered yet, but WandaVision came to an emotional end. Have you recovered, Phil?
Just about. When one door closes and another one opens and all that.
I did like the mention of the ship of Theseus.
Cue frantic Googling by the whole population.
Yeah, we will be applying the ship of Theseus to the Aston Villa team, hopefully over the summer when they rebuild it yet again. Is it really the Villa team if it's been rebuilt? Is this really Dean Smith's team if they've changed the players of the first 11? Is it really Grealish's team if he doesn't play for us anymore? All these questions to be answered next summer. When we come back from now that the season's over and we've got to 40 points and we've shown progress from last season, what more is there to achieve, people? What more is there to achieve? I did laugh when somebody on Twitter said the Sheffield United podcast was typical, like, glass half empty. Well, we just got beat by 10 men.
Bottom of the table team who can't buy a win.
That have only scraped together 11 points. God's sake.
The glass wasn't half empty. It was half full of shit.
Bravo.
Anyway, 40 points. Well, let's try to go on after 40 points. I mean, I'm still excited about 40 points. It's more than we could have dreamed of. Coming up in the show, we will address the recent Villa news, whatever that is. Then in the 3 points, we discuss Rangers winning the league for the first time in 1,000 years. Also, the demise of Chinese champions and the strange goings on in football in China. We also look at a reverend's concern about building a football pitch near his church. There's something to hang on for. Before we get into the discussion of the majestic, the probably one of the most famous points in Aston Villa's history that secured that 40-point target, another season in the Premier League in the bank.
Of all the nil-nils I've watched, that was, without a doubt, the most recent.
And then, rounding off the show in overrated or underrated, we thought let's go for somebody contemporary who still has a pulse, or they didn't have much of a pulse in the game between Villa and Wolves, Mr. Adama Traore. Right, let's get into this Villa news. apart from the headline news that we've got 40 points now. Big man may be coming back. He's in full contact training, so we may see him before the end of the season.
Is he on the grass, David?
Don't shut up. I'm thinking that he'll probably feature in a match day squad after the international break, I would have thought.
You would think they will. He'll probably play 23s this week. I'd have thought that he'll play at least a 23s and probably a behind closed doors game in the international break as well. So they'll try and get him, maybe they'll build him up, get him like an hour, then 90, then 90 or something. They'll really try and push him through now.
Yeah, but there's a bit of time, the international break. I mean, you know, I say it's worked out well time-wise. Well, it hasn't really, because, you know, there's Wesley when you need him, probably needed him, I would say, about a month ago. I think we would have maybe had a bit of a different points tally. More than 40. Meanwhile, bluster from Boris Johnson as he was talking about football coming home in 2030 with a potential World Cup bid, which would bring Villa Park back in the spotlight as a potential venue. I don't see this really happening. I think UEFA are favouring a Spain-Portugal hosting. I mean, this the Boris Johnson one mentioned was the UK and Ireland hosting it. But the UEFA are allegedly tipping Spain and Portugal. Meanwhile, FIFA are very much on the China track. I remember about 5 years ago, I think when Dr. Tony was coming to Villa and I was kind of researching all the Chinese interest in European football, and the Chinese PM was all about China winning the World Cup in 2030. So that half of that was obviously trying to get the tournament in the country. So I'd see that as probably the favourite without having read around the subject too much.
Yeah, FIFA seemed to like to take it to, quote, new territories, don't they? You know, in terms of when they did it, like Japan and Korea, that was pretty groundbreaking, and etc. Emerging nations.
Well, the last two were bought, so
obviously South Africa and
when I say bought, I mean Qatar and Russia, brown paper envelopes. Mm-hmm. Allegedly, maybe there's a few yen brown paper envelopes, but I think the fact that England are hosting like the final stages of the Euros,
semi-finals and final, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit too much to expect that the World Cup as well so soon. I think their last campaign, they really, I mean, they didn't even get close, did they, when they brought out Prince William and Beckham and everybody. So no. Maybe they shouldn't have made that campaign. They should have stalled it a little bit and pounced a bit later. Anyway, so I wouldn't expect to see the World Cup at Villa Park in 2030. Jadon Philogene-Bidas appeared on the bench for the Villa Wolves game, also signed a new pro contract, keeping him at Villa Park until 2024. The fact that he was on the bench against Wolves shows you that that's a contract that was worth making, because he's in the fringes already.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Manchester United beat the Villa women's team 3-0 in a decidedly one-sided affair. Villa didn't actually, they had 26% possession and didn't actually register a shot or corner in the game and remain 4 points above the drop zone. Before we go on, I just wanted to mention on the My Old Man Said Patreon podcast channel that patrons have access to, we're starting a new series called Mom's Short Stories, where if any listeners have had, let's say, experiences with ex-Villa players that are on the funny side, do drop me an email and just find it in the bio of the Twitter address and tell me the story, and we will create a little show around it. So we just did one where Alpi brought a computer while he was at Villa and the shenanigans that ensued, which was quite amusing. Right, let's move on to 3 points. Rangers have finally won a Premier League trophy. Well, the Scottish version, anyway. It's the first time since the 2010-11 season when they won their third one on the trot and probably didn't expect Celtic to win every one henceforth. It was a time when ex-Wolves man Kenny Miller was in the team. He finished top scorer that season. I mean, half the reason was just the fantastic collapse of Celtic, really.
Oh, they've been awful, haven't they? Yeah. I haven't been close this year. Considering Rangers obviously had only come back into the league, hadn't they? What, a couple of seasons back? And then Celtic have just fallen by the wayside. But it's probably good for both of them to see it be a bit more competitive, because Scottish football, since Rangers went down to the bottom tier, well, you know, while the Celtic fans laughed at it and took the piss out of the local rival, the only thing it did was make Celtic weaker and weaker progressively.
Yeah, and I mean, this is what normally happens.
Speaks for itself, doesn't it, in Europe? Mm-hmm.
Having a strong enemy, quote marks, does help keep you on your toes, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I mean, it stopped Celtic getting 10 in a row and sort of like restore balance to the world, keep them both in 9 so that there's not too much trouble. And, but Celtic, it's funny you brought up Ship of Theseus. Is it really Rangers if they got sort of dissolved and reformed? So it's another Ship of Theseus one.
Well, Stephen Gerrard has taken the plaudits. It's quite interesting. There was a bit of a backlash when Lampard got sacked. People were saying, I think it was probably the media, were saying, this is the end of the marquee player turning straight into a manager routine, which I thought that thinking was a bit harsh because... Yeah, Lampard was going about it the right way, you know, managing Derby, and then just the opportunity transpired. And what are you going to do in this position? Say no? It's a bit of a difficult one. I mean,
too good to turn down, isn't it?
I mean, in an ideal world, he'd have tried to get Derby up, really, because that means you've passed, you know, the first test. But Gerrard, I think if you were like a top player and you wanted to get into management, I couldn't think of a better starting point than either Rangers or Celtic to manage one of those, because A, it's infinitely easier. It's a two-horse race, essentially. You've got a chance of boosting your kudos straight away by winning honours, if you're any good. And away you go. And, you know, Gerrard set up nicely there. And, you know, when Jurgen Klopp gets fired after 6 consecutive Anfield losses, I mean, he's not going to get fired, I'm joking, because they're going to definitely win the next game, league game at Anfield anyway.
You would have thought so. You put your mortgage on it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you probably put your mortgage on it. They can't lose against the next team that's turning up at Anfield in the league. But yeah, no, in terms of Gerrard's...
trajectory, David?
Yes, trajectory. To the Liverpool job, I think it's quite a good start, because it's a big club, isn't it, historically?
Big club, big expectation. And I think it's the kind of sort of, it's not such a sticky wicket that, you know, like Lampard maybe had, you know, it was win at all costs. You know, Gerrard's been able to go there and actually implement his style of play. This is what I want a Steven Gerrard team to play like. I think it's a little bit more difficult when you're trying to get out of the Championship. You just got to do it by any means necessary.
Yeah, it's not easy, the path that Lampard's gone down, A, with Derby, and then B, with Chelsea, where, I mean, he would still be in the job if I was the owner of Chelsea, because I thought you'd have to give him time to, A, learn the fucking job, and B, you know, instill his philosophy, and not just panic. I mean, you know, at the start of the season, people were tipping him to bloody win the Premier League.
I mean, they spent a lot of money, isn't it? And I think with investment comes expectation, and dealing with that as a player is different to dealing with it as a manager when it's relatively early in your career.
But if I was the owner of that club, I wouldn't be given a new manager in terms of one that's relatively inexperienced, a shitload of cash just to burn straight away. Anyway, meanwhile, in China... Mm. In recent years, have been, let's say, splashing the cash, and that players either go to Russia. There's kind of a mercenary pathway. There's Russia, there's Qatar, and China are on a similar level. And one of their leading clubs, they're former champions, are they not?
Reigning champions?
Yeah, reigning champions. They're out of business, haven't they? Is it adios?
Yeah, just liquidated, gone.
Zhangzhou, and they recently had Fabio Capello as manager, and they've spent almost 80 million euros on a couple of Brazilians. I mean, makes our Brazilians look like chump change. Alex Teixeira and Ramirez for 50 million and 28 million respectively. And go back a summer or two, 2019, they came close to getting in bail, didn't they? Gareth Bale.
Yeah, seemed to be all agreed, and then Madrid just at the end thought, no, we'll hold on to him just in case.
Yeah, so what's the situation? There's apparently the 16 clubs in the top three divisions that have collapsed in the last year, have they not?
The bubble is bursting, isn't it, quite simply.
It was propped up by the Chinese government, because we had those rumours with Dr. Tony as well, I mean, that the money was coming from the Chinese government, and they've just decided to, it's almost like on a whim, they've just decided, no, we don't like all these teams, you know, trying to spend their way, we want grassroots. So, I mean, along with the pandemic and revenue not coming in via the match-going crowds, it's just been a complete rethink. But I mean, imagine being a fan of that club if you're just starting out, just gone. Your team is just gone in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, because there was the dream of the Prime Minister was to win the World Cup, as I mentioned earlier on, in 2030, and the realisation that's not going to happen. has just caused an implosion, because they've got shares in, is it Atletico Madrid, some in
it's Inter. Suning own Inter in the same way, so yeah. That was why Inter fans were panicking in case they get liquidated.
Yeah, that's right. So it's something that may snowball on in other areas, so keep an eye. Yeah, Atletico Madrid, top of the La Liga, and suddenly they're liquidated before they get to win the league.
Inter Milan, top of Serie A. I mean, that would be a story, yeah. Wouldn't it? In May, two of the top teams in Europe don't get to win the league.
Because they've been liquidated. Right, point number three. Whose is this one? It's got to be Phil Shaw's.
It's got to be this one, isn't it?
Elderly Park Reverend. Elderly Park. Where is this place?
I don't know.
I thought it's got to be an island, surely.
No. Do you think we really care about swearing over here? No.
Macclesfield.
Elderly Park Reverend has raised concerns over plans to build a football pitch near his church over fears of loud swearing and the noise of football.
What, the thud of boot on leather?
What he has says, he says that the sounds of whistle blowing, crowd shouting and individual people shouting, often in a state of heightened emotion, can cause loud swearing. And he says, despite the presence of trees and vegetation, the sounds from the proposed football pitch would carry, and particularly so in the winter, which is the football season when the trees have shed their leaves. So he's put a lot of thought into this.
Yeah, he needs to get some evergreen trees, I think, to block out the sound of the swearing.
At least we know what to buy him for Christmas. Let's just get him some Bose noise-cancelling headphones.
Yeah, so he can do his sermons in peace. Right, let's move on to the big game that got us the big point, that got us to 40 points. Villa versus Wolves. Going into this game, I mean, ultimately it was a chance to double Wolves with no Grealish, and having seen them fail against Sheffield United so spectacularly, I had Wolves down as the favourites for this.
Yeah, I did, to be honest.
Because they were getting back some form. I mean, they're still a bit patchy, but let's say they're better than they were at the start of the season, largely.
There are no mugs in the midfield department, and that's where Villa are struggling. So when you see Moutinho and Ruben Neves in there, you just think to yourself, that could be a long night if the two of them get their foot in the ball and start dictating things.
Yeah, you thought actually the matchup might not work out so well for Villa. But in terms of the first half, Villa very much bossing it, and it was one of those where, we're not taking our chances here. This could be anonymous because Wolves are renowned as more of a second half team. I mean, what was your first thoughts and what was working for us in that first half?
Well, we started quickly, didn't we? You thought from the sort of the first 10 minutes, Villa have got a bit of energy here. We're getting the ball down, moving it quickly. Obviously, Smith has said Wolves don't start well. Get on top of them early. Obviously, I think Watkins had the really good turn, snapshot that hit the bar, which was a really good piece of play. Obviously, Konsa has the big chance when it comes to him at the back post. And you think you've got to score there, but that's two bits of bad luck. But at that point, you're thinking, oh, fucking hell, you've hit the bar twice before half time. Is this going to be another one of those nights? Martinez has had very little to do.
Yeah, I keep mentioning in Match Club, you just referred to Konsa being unlucky there. The point I made there was really you need more of a return from your centre-backs when it turns to goals if you are to be considered a successful team. I mean, the great example would be Alan Evans and Ken McNaught back when Villa won the league. They chipped in a decent amount of goals. I mean, you're kind of expecting, maybe five or six each from set plays and corners. And I think Mings and Konsa got early goals in the season, but they haven't this year really kind of backed that up.
No, I mean, we're second in the table for hitting the woodwork as well. It's mad.
Yeah. Which, at the end of the day, hitting the woodwork is the same as hitting row Z in the stand behind the goal. You don't get a goal. You can call it unlucky, but...
Yeah, and that's happened 15 times, of which I think 7 times has been Watkins.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's kind of astonishing in its own fact. But we've seen some poor finishing let's go back to the centre-backs, whether it's, Courtney Horse's headering, where he can win headers like there's no tomorrow, but directing headers is another matter. we joke that he's got a 50p head.
Certainly Konsa, in front of goal he has.
Yeah, Konsa definitely should have had one against the Wolves. And this is what I mean. When you're struggling in other departments for goals, it's always handy to have your centre-backs chipping in. And this would be an example of a game that perhaps one of our centre-backs, i.e. in this case Konsa, could have got us the 3 points.
Well, he could have had two, couldn't he? He had two of our biggest chances of the game, really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just something about them. They're trying to smash the net. I mean, just a bit of a subtlety. The first one was on the stretch, but the second one, certainly, he blazed it high, wide and handsome, you'd say, at the end.
Yeah, I think with the second one, again, he's done the hard work, similar to the one he had at Sheffield United. And you thought, if he hits the target from that range, it's in.
Yeah.
He just has to hit the target. Even if it's close to the goalie, it'll go through him.
Well, one thing I wonder is, are the two centre halves in the way of someone that you want to be in there? Should somebody else be in there? Maybe one of them just go in? I mean, in the box for attacking free kicks and attacking corners, are they taking up a position instead of, are they the end point of the move instead of being sort of the middle, sort of the bridging point? Should the ball be crossed in and then Mings or Konsa be heading it back across or heading it to, Watkins or anybody in the middle instead of them being the final point?
For somebody at the second phase, essentially.
Yeah, but we've only got one striker for the second phase.
we look pretty good at halftime, and you were kind of thinking, well, if we play like this, we'll be all right in this game. And I'm sure Smith was probably saying more of the same plays in the second half. I think we played well. I know he mentioned about, Villa had set some pretty good traps, actually, and Wolves had a couple of little moments, and they got some good possession. But generally speaking, I didn't think they looked particularly great. I thought Sanson had a pretty good half. He looked very tidy in possession.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think our wide men were that effective, but big noticing thing for me, both in the first half and actually in the second, even though Wolves vastly improved, was El Mohamedi actually didn't have a difficult game, and I thought he would be completely targeted. I thought Wolves would be getting him one-on-one with Traore as much as they could, and he actually had a pretty routine afternoon's work. It was bizarre.
Yeah, after the first half, I thought, well, Wolves aren't going to get any worse than they were in the first half.
So. No.
And then you're thinking, it's the old classic ruining missed chances. But yeah, in terms of Traore and Elmo, I think Neto had a lot more joy down the right-hand side.
He looked pretty lively, to be fair.
And all he does is kick the ball forward and just, with a burst of pace, just relies on his pace, doesn't he? He's not doing anything tricky. He's just burning people off. And Mings a few times had to come across to cover target because he'd been burnt for pace.
Mm-hmm.
And Mings actually did very well there in terms of stifling Neto.
Yeah, he did. And then, of course, you go into the second half, and within about 5 or 10 minutes, you think, oh, hang on a minute, Villa haven't come out for the second half here.
Yeah.
It was kind of noticeable straight away that Nuno had obviously got into them. Whether they'd had a slight change of tactics or shape, etc., I don't know. But certainly, Neves, Moutinho, they started putting their foot on the ball and actually playing the way they can. And Wolves dominated possession a lot in the second half. We just couldn't get out.
So I think Sanson in the first half gave us a little bit more control than we perhaps have had in recent games. But he was a passenger, wasn't he, once Wolves started to take control?
I think so, and I think he just ran out of steam. I mean, Smith said he was Premier League ready and probably he was deserving of getting a start, but I wonder if him coming off pretty much on the money on 60 minutes was a premeditated thing that he said, I'm going to give him an hour today and then I'll give Barkley half an hour. It kind of suggested that he wanted to make that change anyway.
And then you've McGinn, who put in a decent first half performance, one of his best first half. And the second half, I don't even remember seeing him in the second half.
They all got run on top of, didn't they, by Wolves? All three of them, like Louise as well. He had a difficult afternoon, especially in the second half.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Because when you're looking at subs, you're thinking, well, if you want to get a bit more offensive and try to win this game, despite us being overrun, you bring on Barkley, but then you're thinking, well, we've got a more energetic lineup to cater for the Wolves midfield, so maybe you lose something bringing Barkley on, but then you're thinking, well, they're getting overrun anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Get him on. And it was good to see him on 60 minutes rather than any later, as was the criticism against Sheffield United, but Barkley had 15 touches in 30 minutes. I mean, if you want to clutch at stats, there's a key pass in there, but I don't, you know, if you want to sum it up, he had pretty much zero influence on getting Villa over the line there and trying to etch out a win out of nowhere.
Yeah, zero positive influence. There was one negative influence he nearly contributed to.
Oh, God. I mean, that's a nice segue, Phil. That moment where he somehow manages to pass the ball back into his own bloody penalty area. When we've cleared it, you think, what on earth are you doing? And, you know, both those two Wolves chances, I mean, they were probably worse misses than ours, really. Ours were generally, I'd say, a bit more unlucky. The Sayas one, and then the second Cody one, where Martinez makes a brilliant save. But let's be frank, he has no right making a save there. You should be, the net should be rippling there. And the first one, when it comes off the post, the Sayas puts it over, and that's going to go down as probably one of, if not the miss of the season.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous.
Not enough media coverage of that size miss at all. That's horrific. I mean, it's harder to miss. How you can even get the ball up and over from the goal line over the bar, that's unbelievable.
It's that old cliche, and he probably couldn't do that again if he tried.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Barkley giving the ball away, Villa midfield were doing that quite frequently in the first half, I noticed.
They already didn't, they?
They were very, very sloppy. I mean, it's easy to single out a player for something like that. Every player, you know, has a bad touch. But my grudge with Barkley in this game in particular was he wasn't getting on the ball and actually, you know, influencing where the game was going and not doing what he, you know, what it says on the tin, really, when you get somebody like Ross Barkley and pay him top dollar wages.
No, I mean, I don't want to single one player out, particularly in this game, or even necessarily Sheffield United, because I actually thought both games were pretty similar in that the second half, we just run out of ideas and we were just so ineffective. But with Barkley, the narrative that will run while Jack's not in the team is, if Jack doesn't play, Barkley's meant to be your creative spark. And in terms of his age, he is one of the more senior players.
Yeah.
Certainly in terms of stature and the level he's played at, et cetera, and you wouldn't think he was an established Premier League player in England internationally. He looked like a young lad who was just trying to scratch around he's scratching around for form, obviously, but do you know what I mean? You're looking for that person to really, not necessarily be like a captain, but really drive the team, grab the game by the scruff of the neck in the same way that Neves does or Moutinho does for Wolves. They were like, no, give me the ball, I'll take responsibility. And that's been a bit of a theme that we haven't really mentioned much of the last few weeks without Jack, but it's that thing of who's taking responsibility with the ball, because I think Mings and Konsa do it really well at the back in terms of they take responsibility on the defensive side, but you need somebody offensively to go, right, I'm the main man today.
What you just said, the old cliche of scruff of the neck, is exactly what you wanted from Barkley when he came onto the pitch.
Yeah, and a bit of nous.
That was our only hope to, let's say, turn the tide here.
Yeah, because it was frustrating, because I actually thought it was two kind of similar teams in many ways, you know, two sort of sides, relatively mid-table, a little bit spluttering form-wise and probably without their best attacking players. But defensively, I thought we were still, generally speaking, pretty good. I thought Wolves were there to be got at defensively.
So, I mean, the next substitutes, I mean, we're now in the last 10 minutes. Davis comes on for Trezeguet and Ramsey comes on for Traore. So you could look at it one way and go, well, we've just brought on big man or Davis, which obviously he's not brought on for this, what I'm just about to say, and he's taken off the two wide men in terms of who would deliver ammunition, but I don't think he's brought on Davis for that, has he? He's really brought him on to try to get the ball to stick up top a bit more.
Yeah, he's there to be a target man, and that's one thing you have to give Davis credit for. He is good for that, but you need the team to be working around him. It needs to go into feet. It needs to, and the problem is, I think we've seen with a few of these guys that are coming in from the fringes, we're now seeing the downside of these guys not playing much earlier in the season, that it's kind of like you're dusting off the cobwebs from these guys because they haven't been involved. So they're not necessarily that they're not match fit, but they're not match sharp. They're not up to the pace of the way we want to play, or indeed the, you know, a full strength team, but I mean, Wolves in full flow, the game's just going to pass them by, and it did.
Yeah, ideally did.
Yeah, no, but these players aren't going to get in the first 11 earlier on. So it's, you know, what can you do?
No, if Wesley had been fit, ideally Davis, you would have said, would have went out on loan and got some minutes under his belt, because he just looks like every time he comes on that he's either trying too hard or the whole thing passes him by. There was one moment where he got the ball, he used his strength well, and the pitch opened up for him. And instead of, you know, driving towards the net and maybe getting a shot off or something like that, he just seemed to run down into the left wing channel, and then three or four Wolves players around him and another Villa player.
Yeah, he ran into trouble, didn't he? Yeah. It was a bit strange, because it's not something you normally see him do. Normally, he's actually, or generally speaking, when he's been in relatively good form, he's quite direct. He just gets his head down and goes, go on then, carry it. And people just bounce off him, which we didn't see.
I mean, my appraisal of him, he's got the ability, and perhaps more ability and strength than we first thought when he broke into the team. But the thing is that I've always tried to find in him, he just hasn't got that predatory nature or really that fire, because he should be coming on 10 minutes to go and the fans should be going, oh, Davis is coming on, he's going to give them hell for 10 minutes and batter them. But he comes on and he's like the gentle giant, you know, you just look in his face and you know he's not revved up to give him anything, you know, to think about, really. There's no fire there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he needs a bit more shithouse about him.
Or just aggression in general.
Yeah, aggression, yeah. That's a better word.
Feed him raw meat or something just before he gets on. It just needs something to... He does. He just needs, like, the sparks. He needs something to go for him, and then maybe it'll be different.
Yeah. This is probably the longest he's stayed off the treatment table.
Yeah.
There was a lot of reaction to the game about how bad Villa were. And in isolation, I don't necessarily think a draw against Wolves is the worst result, but I think it was the leftovers of the frustration of the Sheffield United game. You know, if you've gone to Leeds and won, you're up equity-wise. And then if you go to Sheffield and get the result, you're as expected. You're like, you got 6 points from the week. If you then get a draw against Wolves, you go, okay, fair enough. 7 points out of nine from 7 days is a pretty good week's work.
And then beat Newcastle and, you know.
Exactly. And
you've
got
momentum.
Exactly. Whereas because you've lost your momentum at Sheffield, a draw against Wolves, all of a sudden everyone's like, well, you've got to go to Newcastle and win now. If you're looking up the table, because all of a sudden Spurs have put a run together, other teams are winning games.
Yeah, but I think, as I said before the Sheffield United game, we really needed to build a foundation for talk of higher up in the league and Europe, or
agreed,
whatever you want to phrase it. And
we are where we are now.
To flunk out at Sheffield United and then, you know, not beat Wolves, which in isolation is no big deal. The draw is a fair result. Just shows you where we're going to end up this season, and the gap's going to grow, and you know, both Villa and Wolves will be nestling in for mid-table.
Yeah, it was just frustrating, but it was a completely fair result. And there's not been that many times when we've said that this season. We thought, yeah, do you know what, we probably didn't do enough to win, and we were wasteful in front of goal. So were they. Two very even teams over 90 minutes. Take the point and move on.
Yeah. If you want the glass half empty podcast, it's it's four goals in the last seven games, and Villa didn't register a shot on target until the 92nd minute of this one, after only having one shot on target against Sheffield United. Now, this is more concern now, because there's actually a theme here, and this is something that Smith obviously has to address. I mean, do we just sit around waiting for Grealish to solve it? I think, you know, on his Instagram post, he put up a little sand timer, which suggests he might be back for that Newcastle game. But I don't think you can sit around waiting for him.
You've got to get it right so that when he slots back in, he elevates you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is a concern because he is part of those seven games also where we've only scored four goals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think, David, you said it, it's like you've had a taste of what could have been when beating Liverpool double over Arsenal, and you'd think it would be the same for the players. They've had a taste, they've had all the hype and social media and everything else, you know, blowing smoke up them. You'd think, yeah, I want to carry on, I want more of this. And it's just the last few games, it's like they're not doing very much wrong, it's just they don't have the hunger to keep getting that praise.
There's too many sixes and sevens out of tens. When we were beating Liverpool, it was seven, eights and nines pushing 10, some
because,
people, you know, it's that extra level up.
The back line, they have a sense of pride what they're doing. I mean, 14 clean sheets now, which is pretty astonishing. And you can see it, you know, Mings is on a mission pretty much every game now, as is his cohorts in the back four, and Martinez is wired in to get as many clean sheets as possible. So it's a real shame that we're not actually taking advantage of that further up the pitch, because the foundation from the defence is there to win games 1-0. If, you know, all you got got to do score one fucking goal.
I was just going to say, the way we're playing defensively, you think if we score, we'll win this game against most teams, bar bloody Burnley, especially if we score first.
And, you know, we beat Wolves if we score once. Against Sheffield United, we don't lose. I think if we scored once there, we'd probably get another one. But it is a shame to waste this. And we were joking about the 40 points being a game set and match for the season. But you can see that this is a missed opportunity more so than, you know, it's progress, of course.
I mean, we've said it a few times, haven't we? It's like, at some point, you're going to have to just draw a line under last season. In that, you know, we all know the narrative is the curve is going up, it's positive, we've progressed, etc., etc. But in the here and now, from where we've been, we have set the bar. And I'm like a fucking broken record at the minute because we've set the bar high.
It's not the ship of Theseus either, because we've replaced half of that team that just barely escaped relegation.
We are a different team this season. We are a much better team. We're probably a stronger squad as well. Yeah, and I'm probably off the field. We're in a much leaner, meaner shape. I think Smith's smarter for last season. They've all learned. And it's like you've set the bar high. You've got to maintain standards. And they're just, sorry, but this side of Christmas, they're not maintaining standards.
Speaking of maintaining standards, it's time for overrated or underrated. Right, change of pace, actually. We've got somebody who is actually...
rapid.
He's still in circulation, and he's wears baby oil, and he's rather fast. Mr. Adoma Traore, the first question you've got to ask is why? Why the baby oil? But no, it's more seriously, why did Villa sign him?
Moneyball, baby.
I mean, this is deep, deep stats to moneyball him, but... as a raw prospect, I thought it was a good catch. I mean, forget the Barcelona tag. The first time you saw him play, you were like, fucking hell, he's raw. But at the same time, you saw, fucking hell, he's fast and big.
Yeah, I remember seeing one of his first games. I think we played, I want to say it was Notts County. Oh, not the only the early round of the League Cup. And he was, everyone was just like, who the fuck is this guy? He was absolutely lightning. But he was like, you know, normally quick players are sort of small, nippy and like rockets. This guy was like just stocky and strong. He was just like, wow.
Just people bouncing off him.
Yeah. I hadn't seen a player like that in a Villa shirt, to be honest. That kind of strength. The only person who was even close was someone like Dalian Atkinson, who was like, he was strong as well as being quick.
Because I thought at that stage, considering his age, and he was he still a teenager, wasn't he? 20?
Yeah, he was young.
You had to take your hats off to the scouting team, even though they were much derided at the time. I mean...
you almost thought, how on earth have we got this guy? What, where's the catch?
There is the argument that crop of players from Verity to Amavi to Drissa Gay...
We'll just leave out Rudiger Stead.
And we'll leave out Les Scott and Richards, yeah?
But in terms of overseas imports, in hindsight, pretty good. But this guy at the time, we were struggling... We needed something, and every fucking week was the same. Lackluster. Traore had a few injuries here and there, but there was times that he was actually fit, but they just considered him too raw. And it's like, well, what else is there? What's happening on the pitch gives us no chance of winning. You know, if nothing else, you know, get him on the bench, bring him on for the last 10 minutes, last 20 minutes, warm up the crowd for their trip home.
Yeah, it's like a missile. It'd be mutually assured destruction. Somebody's getting some damage going to be done when you put him in the pitch.
Yeah, because you witness that goal. Traore, when he just went through the Sunderland team, crossed it in, and Carlos Gil did an overhead kick, and suddenly it's like Brazil 1970 / 1982 team.
Still lost the game, mind.
Yeah. But it's an underrated moment. I mean, in terms of just pure dynamic skill, technique, execution.
And athleticism on both their parts.
Unexpectedness, surprise, unbelievable.
No, I really thought it was going to be like our version of Kanchelskis. When I first seen that pace, I just went, this is unbelievable. But I mean, you knew Gabby, but at the time, Gabby had lost a yard or two. But, you know, it was it was even quicker than he was when he burst onto the scene.
Yeah, I mean, if you saw the YouTube clip of Traore burning through the Sunderland team, Carlos Hill overhead kick, you're thinking as a neutral, if you know nothing about Premier League, how many points did this team win the league by?
And then you realise it's how far adrift at the bottom were they?
Yeah, it's insane. You can have a moment like that and finish up where we did. But there was something going on behind the scenes there. I mean, there's a story that I heard, like inside story, was when Sherwood watched him for the first time. He was like, "What is that?" because I just thought he was a bit of a headless chicken in terms of football IQ. You know, there was none there.
Well, he was just quick. He was just a weapon to be used, wasn't he?
And, you know, go back to Gabby. He admitted himself that, you know, he was just quick in the early years and that was it. And, you know, O'Neill, even when it got to O'Neill, he just liked him because he was quick and he had to learn on the job in terms of shooting. But you got to remember, this is somebody who's 19 when he was at Villa. And you're thinking, if you teach him how to play football, just the raw power of him and the speed, you've got a weapon there. And in terms of, it doesn't have to be your starting 11 man. He's just somebody who comes on and, you know, the opposition shit themselves. And this is something...
He makes the opposition play differently.
Yeah, it's tools. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a different weapon. It gives you variety. It gives you options. Gives you a threat in another way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he just fell foul. Suddenly you had a Villa team...
imploding.
And he was really too young to throw in at that stage. I mean, the fact that I was saying just throw him on, you know, get him on, wasn't because, you know, he was a great player and he would help us. It was just like, hey, we were a lost cause and he was there for entertainment. Let him join, you know, let him learn on the job. And I think that was the problem ultimately with him. He was somebody we needed to like nurture for a good, you know, three seasons to get him into somebody who's in an effective member of the matchday squad. And as soon as you drop, you know, it's panic stations and it's a different ball game, isn't it?
Yeah.
He wasn't ready at that age to help us in the championship.
I mean, he could have been devastating, couldn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I think if he was a couple of more seasons on, or even a season on, if he had, let's say, 30 games under his belt of English football, then he would have been devastating in that league.
Strangely enough, when we swapped him and he went to Middlesbrough with Adoma coming the other way, it took Tony Pulis to sort of teach him how to play English football, if you want to put it like that.
Yeah, in the championship.
Yeah. What a strange mentor to have for going from Barcelona B to Tony Pulis.
In Middlesbrough.
But that was an interesting transfer, actually. This is a real case of short-term versus long-term. We went for the short-term, and I think it paid off ultimately.
Adoma was good, wasn't he, for a couple of years, I thought.
Adoma was good. You can't really grumble about that transfer at the end of the day.
Not at the time. And who would have, I think, and the Villa fans, generally speaking, I know I was one of them who said when we got rid of him, it was like, do you know what? He might go on and be a player, but right now we don't need this. This is pretty pointless. If you can get money or you can get him out, fair enough. He'd kind of been lumped in with that team that had got relegated, probably unfairly, but.
Yeah, I mean, if you bounce back straight away and you kept him, then happy days.
Yeah, you never know.
You can start developing again. Imagine him playing in the under-23s team. He would score 40 goals a season just by running in a straight line.
Him and Russian Hepburn Murphy.
Just let him take the kick off and just run in a straight line towards goal. I mean, they're just going to be bouncing off him. It was a great signing for long-term planning, I think, but we dive-bombed into the Championship.
And then he got his big move back to the Premier League in the end anyway when Wolves came into him, and obviously Middlesbrough had, you know, failed to get promoted. Obviously, well, we'd beat them in the playoffs, didn't we?
But I think if we had him in our squad now, I think we're laughing, really.
It'd be an interesting option, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
In sort of small, concentrated bursts. I mean, that first season he had in the Premier League, all the Premier League defenders were like, who the fuck is this guy? Isn't this the guy who went down with Villa the other year? And he just ran riot, didn't he, in six small moments? Yeah.
Because, you know, thinking about it, you know, again, like in the Wolves game we've just spoken about, you're bringing on Keenan Davis for the last 10 minutes, or you're bringing on Adoma Traore, you know, you're suddenly pumped when he comes on.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, we've got a chance here. At least we're going to get some excitement for 10 minutes.
He's an interesting one, isn't he? He's one of those really enigmatic players who he can have real moments of genius and is a genuine game changer, but often...
Yeah, he can be a match winner.
He just drifts out of games. And I think he must be a really frustrating player for whatever club he's at, because you think what he can do on his day, but you see it so infrequently. I mean, every time I've seen him when he's come back to Villa Park, and even, you know, the game over the weekend, he hasn't really done anything.
I mean, this is still early in his career in terms of his age, but when we beat Middlesbrough at their patch and then they came back to ours, we were thinking, right, we've got it. I mean, they only had one threat, didn't they? Because they were so all about getting men behind the ball, because it was Pulis. So it was all about him, but Hutton dealt with
pocketed him.
Mm-hmm.
Easy job. And, you know, he's not the greatest marker in the world, old Hutton, but
we didn't remember that, because we didn't even play particularly well that night.
Oh, we were terrible, but we didn't need to be anything more.
It was Bruce Ball at its finest that night.
If that game carried on for over 4 days, it would still be 0-0. Anyway, Traore, where is he now, as we like to ask?
Elmo's back pocket.
Yeah, pretty much. I think Elmo's doing well because he was kind of going to, he was meeting him rather than backing off. Yeah, because he knew if he let him run at him, he would be toast.
Yeah.
There was talk of Liverpool being interested in him at one stage. I think it was last season or this season.
I think if he was going to go, he probably should have gone last season. I still think he might have a big move in him, but I think that the really big clubs are going to look at him and go, is he a banker? He might be very expensive for not a lot of end product.
Yeah, well, he seems to have a foot out the door at Wolves already. They're already talking about knocking the price down from this summer, there's rumours, so who knows where he'll end up.
Yeah, it seems like they want to, if they're going to get money for him, get rid of him sooner rather than later while we've got some budget.
Right, anyway, the big question. When he was at Villa, Traore, underrated or overrated?
I'm going to go underrated for a change. I think I would still have him at Villa. Just for most of the reasons we've said, bring him on, just do demolition and then tidy up the mess afterwards.
Yeah, based purely on the season we had him, which was the year we went down, you thought, for God's sake, put him in the team, at least give me something to smile about. At least he's fun to watch. So I'm going to say underrated, just for purely entertainment value.
Yeah, I'm going for underrated. I mean, ultimately, it's a hard one because he was used to leverage the Adoma transfer. But ultimately, if you're buying a 19-year-old, he's not somebody you put front and centre and blame for relegation. He's somebody who you're drip-feeding in. And, the last couple of years would have been when he was actually effectively part of the first 11. So I'm going to go underrated as well. He was just victim of circumstance, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Right. Anyway, before we go, I just want to give a big thanks to the My Old Man Said patrons for supporting the show, especially Mr. Rakshav Chandigarh for signing up as a patron, and also Mr. Charming Man and Mike Sabovic for becoming annual patrons. If you sign up annually, you get 2 months free, which is around 15% off. And when you become a My Old Man Said patron, you get access to the Patreon Extra podcast channel, where we have various different shows, from my solo one Off the Record to The Mad Few to Mom's Short Stories. And then another show, which is incoming, that I'm not going to mention because it just winds people up when I mention that it's coming and it doesn't appear. But it's getting there, people. It's getting there. And also, last but certainly not least, you have access to the exclusive club that is Match Club. Some call it therapy. Some call it a rollicking good night out. Where
depends on the day of the week, doesn't it?
Yeah, we prefer these weekend matches where we actually win, these midweek shenanigans. That's when it's therapy. At the weekend, it's more of a...
That's when it really feels like hump day, doesn't it?
More of a party, but we get together for the match before half time, after the game. So do sign up, support the show and website, and join the inner circle. Right. Also, do subscribe to the show on whatever podcast app that you listen to, so you get notifications for when it pops. Spread the word. You know, if you see the tweet on Twitter for the new episode, do give it a retweet to help it get to like-minded people, and spread the good word. Right. Any closing words as we get out of here?
On to Newcastle.
Mm-hmm. Away the lads.
Right. Until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders that we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.